Live from beyond the Beltway, this is Eric Cohn, filling in for Bruce Dumont with our weekly analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by conservative Jonathan Greenberg, Democrat Pat Whalen. Also featuring commentary from, in hour number one, co-founder and editor-in-chief of Based Politics, Brad Palumbo, and in hour number two, Jack Butler of National Review. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base, AM 560 The Answer, WIND Radio in beautiful Elk Grove Village, Illinois. Our phone lines are open now at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289 to be a part of the program with us this evening. A lot to talk about. Want to wish everybody a very happy St. Patrick's Day, or for people who are where Jonathan and Pat are in the city of Chicago, where all of the revelry goes on. It's best known as the reinforcing of the stereotypes. So I hope everybody had a really good opportunity to go see The River Dyed Green and to maybe ponder the question that was posed in the great movie The Fugitive, which is, if they can dye the river green one day out of the year, why can't they dye it blue the other 364? Lots to talk about this week, and I want to start with a rare occasion of bipartisan agreement in Congress, which is the speed at which this legislation, which would demand that ByteDance, which is the parent company that owns the social media platform TikTok, divest from TikTok, sell it off to someone within 6 months, or it would be banned within the United States. And the form that it essentially would take is you would not be able to find it on the app stores of the, you know, both Apple, Google, anywhere else where you would download apps. There would be problems, of course, with this, which are similar to, and maybe we'll get into a little bit of this, the legislation that was passed in Texas, that essentially the age verification law that has caused Pornhub to pull out of Texas. Nobody giggle at that. But we want to get to the same kind of problem that, well, that they're dealing with there. I even stumped myself with my own bad joke. You can get around that with a virtual private network. As my understanding, you could also get around and download this app from places with a virtual private network. So there's questions about whether or not you could successfully ban it. But there's bigger questions, which are, anytime that you've got Congress all in agreement with each other, is something really good going on? Or is it a sign that we should all be suspicious? Is it a good idea to force ByteDance to divest from TikTok, this platform, which is the last time I checked, third largest social media by users platform in the entire country, in the entire world. So this is a significantly popular platform, especially with younger people. There have been lots of concerns raised, not only about it, but about other social media apps, about the impact it's having on younger people. And of course, there is the reality that ByteDance is a company that is headquartered in China. And there is a big question about how much control the Chinese Communist Party exerts over it. So I'm going to start here with Jonathan. What are your feelings about this legislation? Is this a good effort? Do you think it's something that should be done?
Okay, so first of all, I know that we're supposed to be dealing in rumor and innuendo, but I didn't know the innuendo in question was about Pornhub pulling out of something. So that was all better. I'll preface everything I'm about to say with, I have a lot of sympathy for the arguments against forcing the sale and banning it if they don't sell it. I'm sure we'll get further into that. But in this case, I absolutely think that the sale should be forced. I think most of the concerns that people have on national security grounds, and it is a national security threat, but most of the concerns are hypothetical, but they're really easy to hypothesize about. The CEO of ByteDance says that there is not a lot of control. There's no control by the Chinese Communist Party. That could change whatever the Chinese Communist Party wants. And the amount of data that the CCP would have on younger Americans who will eventually grow up into leadership positions is extraordinary. So first of all, just as a data mining exercise on the part of the Chinese communists, this is a national security threat. But also the algorithm is a concern. And we don't allow foreign companies, or let alone foreign governments, to purchase television stations, radio stations, newspapers. We don't allow any of those things to have more than, I think, a 20% share of foreign ownership for a reason. Now, the argument that you'll hear is that, well, these aren't publishers, these are just platforms. But that's only kind of true because TikTok has an algorithm that pushes things to the fore that are good for the Chinese communists and that bury things that are bad for the Chinese communists. So perhaps they're not actually publishing these things, the individuals using them are publishing, but they're definitely controlling what we see, also making it a national security threat. So I'm in this limited instance, because of who this problem it comes from, I'm for the forced sale and for the ban if they don't sell it. But I'll say this to end, and I tweeted this out a couple of days ago, I would feel a lot better about this if it was all part of a broader strategy to confront and degrade Chinese influence in our markets and culture.
Brad Palumbo is the co-founder and editor-in-chief of Based Politics. Brad, what are your impressions of the legislation, of the concerns both around, what Jonathan raised there? There are national security concerns. There are some speech concerns. There are some questions about the nature of the kind of company this is. There's questions about the algorithm. I know you're active on TikTok. Feel free to share anything from your experience there. But what do you make of this legislation moving through Congress?
Yeah, so the first point I want to make is that I think we should dispense with the notion that this bill is really a divestiture bill. It is a ban, and there's a reason that its co-sponsors, including Chip Roy and Elise Stefanik, in announcing it, referred to it as a ban. The timeline and the details of the sale would be so difficult for ByteDance to actually accomplish and achieve. And the sale would most likely be blocked by China's export controls on algorithmic technology. So I think we should be honest that what we're talking about here is a ban on TikTok. We're not talking about a forced divestiture like we saw with, funnily enough, of all platforms, Grindr, where they were able to actually do a divestiture. But that was a very different scenario. And almost everybody involved with this legislation openly wants to ban TikTok. I think the divestiture has been thrown in there to make the vote easier for people to explain away. Well, we tried to not ban it, but they gave us no choice. No, they are banning it. And I think we should be honest about that and debate the pros and cons. And what I'll say is this. The national security concerns, I think, are valid, but are almost all purely hypothetical and are also wildly being overblown. Almost all of the data that TikTok has on Americans is stuff that's already collected and sold to the highest bidder, including the Chinese if they want it, with no limitations whatsoever, by Meta, by Instagram, by Twitter, by Google, by all these platforms. So,
Brad, we're coming up. We're coming out of a break.
I want to collecting our data.
I want to hold you there. We're going to come back and let you finish your thoughts on TikTok and a whole lot more when we are back after this break. Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont, Eric Cohn filling in this week for Bruce. Back after this.
We can tell you about the incredible success we bring to local businesses, but it's better when it comes directly from our satisfied clients. Here's just one example.
After searching for a new vendor to handle my search marketing campaign, I contacted Salem Surround after seeing the great work they did for another restoration company in the different market. Their team of experts recommended a mix of multiple tactics designed to get my business the most quality leads at the lowest cost, making my marketing budget stretch further. In our first year partnering with Salem Surround, we recorded our best year to date, and I've told many people how blessed I was to find them. The representative answered the phone every time I called and quickly addressed any questions or concerns I had.
Let Salem Surround give you an absolutely free audit of your current marketing and show you what your competition is doing. Then we can come up with a personalized plan that's perfect for your needs. Visit SurroundChicago.com and let our marketing experts help you achieve real success. Remember to visit SurroundChicago.com today.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nia Hergaris with today's tip for kids from the American Academy of Pediatrics. As parents, we want our children to grow up healthy and strong. That means helping teens take responsibility for their health as they become young adults. One way to do that is to make sure they have one-on-one time with their pediatrician. That helps them become comfortable talking about any health issue with their doctors and with you. So make sure to give your teen a voice. It's good for their health. For more on teen health, visit healthychildren.org.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
We're back on Beyond the Beltway. Eric Cohn filling in this week for Bruce Dumont. And I want to go back to Brad and let you finish what you were saying about your thoughts on this TikTok legislation in general. But I want to throw out the question, I guess, to answer part of your concern, which is the legislation is framed in such a way as to give such a short amount of time for the divestiture sale of TikTok as to make it impossible, thus making it, in effect, a ban. Would you, if they changed the timeline of it, if they made it more possible for ByteDance to have enough time to divest of it, would it change your opinion on the general thrust of this legislation at all?
You know, maybe I'd still be kind of uncomfortable with it for other reasons. I mean, if we put ourselves in these shoes, how would we respond if an American company was attempted by another foreign market to be forced to be sold? I think there's just no scenario in which we would accept that. And I also think TikTok has no incentive to comply with this, or ByteDance rather, because if it's banned in America, that's only about 10% of their users. So, and this is an incredibly innovative and valuable company they would be giving up. So I kind of see the entire thing as a detour. But just to put a pin in that for a second, what I will say is I think whatever national security concerns there are can be addressed with less drastic measures than banning an app that 170 million Americans use to communicate and express themselves. So one thing I do support is banning the use of TikTok on all government devices and by all government employees. I think that's perfectly reasonable. We've seen both the federal government and different state governments enact that. I'm totally supportive of that. But what I don't want to do is, I think people fail to realize this, how many individuals would be ruined by this, who've built up six-figure businesses or even seven-figure businesses on this platform. People have built entire careers that will be destroyed by this. I think we're talking tens of thousands of individuals' careers ruined. I think we're talking about tens to hundreds of thousands of businesses that will be severely adversely impacted through losing a huge marketing platform they've built their businesses around. I don't think there's enough. People are like, oh, it's just cat videos and China propaganda. One, I actually don't think that's true. If you use TikTok, the algorithm doesn't show you things that advance the CCP's interests. Not really. It shows you what you engage with at high rates. And that's why people use it instead of Instagram, instead of YouTube. It's very good at showing users what they want to see. I don't actually buy, as someone who's used the app and is very familiar with TikTok, that it's really put its finger on the scale in terms of the algorithm all that much. But that's why I'm not a fan of this. I think we can take much less drastic steps. And I think the costs and consequences of this on Americans are being overlooked.
Pat Whalen is our card-carrying Democrat joining us this evening. Pat, feel free to give us your general thoughts on this legislation. But again, I throw out the point that's always fascinating to me about this is the way that there was just this rush of bipartisanship around this of both Democrats and Republicans coming together to overwhelmingly vote in favor of this, which is just not a sight we're used to seeing out of Washington lately.
Well, yes. I can't remember the last time the House got to 253 on, a post office naming vote, let alone something as wide ranging as a bill like this. And just as it's hard to find bipartisanship on the Hill these days, we're going to have some bipartisanship here on Beyond the Beltway. I think that there's great points made on both sides here. You know, I'm an Instagram guy. Because I'm patriotic, I like my data mined by American companies, and plus all the good TikToks, they just end up on Instagram anyway. You know what I mean? So
this has been my point. I'm an elderly millennial. I get my TikTok videos on Instagram a week later.
Exactly. And I can wait. But I understand Brad's point about the algorithm. You know, from what I'm hearing about people who understand this technology aspect much better than I do, and not just because I don't use the app, is that the algorithm of this app is really what sets it apart. And so I think that it is unfortunately a trope of Congress that they are out of touch with the American people. And Brad's other point about how much financial stake that Americans and individual content creators have off ad deals and things of the like off this app is a massive, massive thing. And it is an election year. So it is really interesting to me that it would reach such high numbers. The only answer to that must be that these briefings that they're having about security issues are very serious, and they're striking chords with people who would make such a vote, where they're receiving phone calls from middle schoolers in school saying, I will do something bad if you ban TikTok, which, of course, I agree. For all intents and purposes, the divestment of ByteDance is indeed going to end TikTok as we know it. It will kill the app. Congress and the Biden administration need to make the case for these security concerns. I think everyone here would be wide open to listening to intelligence and serious issues that we have with infrastructure and cybersecurity in this country. I'm here in Chicago. The river is green, but Lurie's Children's Hospital had a cyber attack not 2 weeks ago, and there was a lot of data stolen and sold online. Our cyber infrastructure is very vulnerable in this country, and that is a serious issue. And so I think Congress needs to eat their vegetables on this. If you want to ban TikTok, that's kind of a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound. I think there's a larger conversation that needs to be had here, and they're not making the case to voters clearly.
Jonathan, I want to come back to you and feel free to respond to anything you've heard so far. But the point that I think is my biggest point of hesitation with this legislation, to the extent that I am persuaded by the national security concerns, and I'm the producer of a documentary about what the CCP has been doing in Hong Kong. So let's just suffice it to say, I'm pretty paranoid about China and what the Chinese Communist Party has done, is doing, and would like to do. What makes me most nervous about this legislation is the form that it is taking and the amount of authority and power that it looks to invest in the executive branch to make determinations as to who is an adversarial nation. This kind of legislation strikes me as the kind of thing that in the time that it's passed, under the auspices in which it is passed, everybody goes, well, of course we're talking about TikTok, and of course we're talking about ByteDance, and of course we're talking about China. And then a few years down the road, maybe this country too, and this specific app, wouldn't it be better, rather than to invest this amount of power in the executive branch to make these determinations, to more specifically write the legislation, either to name specific countries and limit it only to that? Or I guess what I'm saying is, should Congress just do its job better than it's even attempting to do its job right now?
Oh, Eric, come on. Should Congress do its job better? How many times on this program have we lamented the fact that we don't have a Congress that takes its job at all seriously, that acts as if it's a way station for wannabe talk radio hosts and not for people who are serious about governing. Look, I mean, if you want something handled badly, give it to the U.S. Congress to handle. And this is not great. Look, I said at the outset, I don't love this. I would prefer it be part of a much broader, well thought out, preferably by adults, strategy for confronting and degrading China. But the fact of the matter is, we are in something of a Cold War with a country that's much more serious about fighting it than we are, that has significant cultural influence in our country, that can force the NBA to do things, can force Hollywood to do that, that has a lot of control over our cultural institutions and the engines of culture. And the engines of culture, of course, are upstream of politics. So it's in some ways much more important that they control those things. And, you know, it is a relatively small national security threat, but that doesn't change the fact that it's a national security threat. Would I like there to be a more serious effort to handle the things that I just, yes, of course I would. Would I like Congress to do its job on this and everything else? Sure, I would. But good Lord, I'll take what I can get.
Right, go ahead.
Eric, yeah, if I could just add one thing. The thing that bothers me about this legislation, too, is that it doesn't just target TikTok. Like you mentioned, it gives the president this power, just carte blanche, going forward, to ban websites that are owned by an adversarial nation. And why not vote on it every time, right? Why give some sort of a blank power to do this into the future? If this is so important, and if this is such a national security threat, there should be a vote in Congress to do this in every instance it is necessary. They shouldn't vote once and say, all right, well, now going forward, the president can just do this whenever it's appropriate. If they decide they really need to ban TikTok, have an on-the-record vote specifically to ban TikTok. And then, you know, if there's Flip Talk in 10 years that's owned by Russia and it's popular, they should have to vote again to ban it, right? They shouldn't just devolve this power to the executive, because that's very ripe for abuse. I mean, we've seen when you give the executive branch leeway, they will take it and run with it and stretch it to the absolute max and breaking point and then some. I don't think it's proper for them to be delegating this as some sort of perennial authority.
Flip-talk, I think we can all agree that
FlipTalk is the Teslic of social media apps.
I think we can all agree that whatever the Russian social media app is going to be is probably going to be the most depressing social media app that anybody will ever encounter.
Can I actually answer that question? The reason that they're not going to do it every time is because this is part of a pattern of Congress ceding its power to the executive. They don't want to do it every time. They don't want to do their jobs. Right. They
the
want to see as much power.
The same people have complained about that are now authoring this legislation.
Totally agree.
Yeah, it does. Pat, I will come back to you. Actually, go ahead real quick.
Chip Roy always has the strangest bedfellows, doesn't he? But yes, this ceding this power in a Congress that cannot get anything done. I mean, really, 253 in the House of Representatives is extremely rare. And so is it simply out of necessity that we cannot have the children playing with these types of powers? Or is it a flexibility the executive branch needs to be able to see these things coming down the pike? Both are bad.
Yeah. I am really glad you went with Chip Roy to make the strange bedfellows point rather than, say, Lauren Boebert to make the strange bedfellows point. But that's neither here nor there. A lot more on TikTok and all this going on in Washington when we are back after this break. Eric Cohn filling in this week for Bruce Dumont on Beyond the Beltway.
I'm Seth Leibson of 960thepatriot.com for Town Hall. Before he wrote 1984, George Orwell wrote an essay about the corruption of language for political purposes. The abuse of language, he said, is to make lies sound truthful and murder respectable. I introduce you to the Joe Biden presidency. Last week, Joe Biden used the word illegal to describe the alleged killer of Laken Riley, and then retracted it, saying he should have called him undocumented. We actually know the alleged murderer was here illegally. Then Joe Biden issued what he called a red line to our ally Israel and its war to defeat Hamas. Threats to an ally, kinder and gentler words for a murderer. Meanwhile, Joe Biden has called the terrorist organization Hamas our opponents, while he calls American Republicans extremists and threats to democracy. Just who is our enemy to Joe Biden? Through his language, we are learning. I often read the novel 1984 and think, MOFA, let's make Orwell fiction again. Well, it's not just about the novel. I'm Seth Leibson.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Matthew.
Huh? Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey. Want a drink?
No, thanks. I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Let's be honest. The National Symphony may not be in his future, but he wanted to try violin. So you said yes because you love him. And if you love him that much, love him enough to make sure he's buckled up and in the back seat. Find out more about keeping your kids safe in your vehicle at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Show him you love him. Keep him safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
We are back on Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont. I am not Bruce Dumont. I am Eric Cohn, filling in for Bruce this week. And we have reached the appointed portion of this program where we have our guests introduce themselves to our listening audience. And since I am filling in for Bruce, I will start with myself. I'm Eric Cohn. I am the Director of Marketing and Communications at the Acton Institute for the Study of Religion and Liberty, based in Grand Rapids, Michigan. But of course, any opinions expressed by me on this program this evening are entirely my own and not those of the Acton Institute. As I alluded to earlier, I'm the producer of a documentary called The Hong Konger, Jimmy Lai's Extraordinary Struggle for Freedom, about the political dissident in Hong Kong and what the Chinese Communist Party has been doing to him and that city. I encourage you to check that out at freejimmylai.com. And again, a big thanks to Bruce for having me helm the microphone for this episode of the program. And we'll continue going around the horn here with Jonathan Greenberg.
Thanks, Eric. My name is Jonathan Greenberg. I advise a private family charitable foundation mostly focused on Jewish and liberty causes. Before that, I was in the liberty movement, a vice president at the Illinois Policy Institute. I have been a Midwest political director at APAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. I'm an ordained rabbi, but I also have a poli-sci degree from Indiana University, who is not in the NCAA tournament, and I'm bitter about it.
Well, there's always next year, Jonathan. There's always next year. And there's always Indiana football coming up in the fall. So at least you've got that to look forward to. Brad Palumbo.
Yeah, I'm Brad Palumbo. I'm an independent journalist, political commentator, YouTuber, Dally and TikTok, although I've been banned on there multiple times, and the co-founder of Based Politics.
Great. Thanks for joining us for the program, Brad and Pat Whalen.
Pat Whalen, high-functioning cynic is my typical introduction here beyond the Beltway. Jonathan, I'm a recovering Bills fan, so I feel for you, sir. I'm the host of Good Evening with Pat Whalen. It's a late-night talk show news alternative here in Chicago. And I'm a commercial actor as well. You may have seen me on television. getting tackled by James Harrison during a FanDuel commercial, and other such dalliances. But I do love a good conversation about TikTok. So thanks for having me, Eric.
You're very welcome. I will stick with you, Pat. So I could go a couple different directions here, but I'll stick with the question of executive authority that we were just talking about. There are a lot of Democrats who were voting for this legislation, which right now is going to invest Joe Biden with the authority to make these kinds of determinations about TikTok, but as Brad pointed out, about potentially other websites in the future. How comfortable are you as a Democrat, and do you think other Democrats are, with the possibility, as I take a look at the RCP polling average here, that it could very well be Donald Trump making these determinations somewhere here in the near future?
This is exactly one half of my largest concern. The one half being that the executive branch can be occupied by anyone. If anything, the last decade has showed us is that the sky or the basement is the limit. So it is quite an investment in the hope of the future to say that anyone who is president will be able to make these decisions. The other, of course, is what I'm surprised hasn't been brought up yet, is that the Biden campaign is using TikTok. Now, there is a large part of me as an internet marketer who would say you have to meet people where they're at. But if these national security concerns that I have said before, I just don't see Congress making to the American people, because I'm sure we don't all have security clearance that we need to understand them. This is a big leap. And I really think that combining our other two guests' ideas, we're just coming to an age here where we need to understand as a nation and a planet that the time before the internet is not coming back. We have to change the way that we do everything. And the way that we are approaching this in terms of ownership and financial influence and security concerns and things of that nature, this is just part of a much broader conversation that I don't know the public or our representatives are equipped to have with each other, let alone with ourselves.
But hey, Brad, I love it. I want to come back to you. Well, Brad, something I want to come back to you on is I'll take a moment here of my host prerogative to share that for the promotion of this documentary that I mentioned, the Acton Institute created an account on TikTok, and we were sharing promotional content of the film. We got banned a couple of times. Unsurprisingly, the video that we put up that included footage of Tiananmen Square was one of the videos that was taken down by TikTok. So, you know, I tend, as someone who has been a digital marketer for a considerable amount of time now, I usually take in stride a lot of the hysterics that come about when people talk about social media companies and algorithms. I think a lot of it is that it's still very young and we have yet to really learn how to live with these things. But maybe I'm just at a peak amount of paranoia personally based on my experience there. But I'm curious, as you mentioned, being banned on TikTok several times, what kind of content got caught up in violations there? What got you banned, and what are your impressions of that experience?
Yeah, so I think people might be reading it into it too much if they think that TikTok is banning and censoring content with a specific agenda in mind. In reality, it's just the most highly censorious and hypersensitive filter of all of the social media platforms. So the things that got me banned include having a mock, not even a real gun, a mock musket displayed in a video, banned. Having an image of Hunter Biden doing crack, banned. Also, the other thing was defending Kyle Rittenhouse's jury verdict of not guilty, banned. And so it doesn't surprise me that obviously, you know, content about Hong Kong's struggle for freedom would get banned, or about Tiananmen Square. I will say this, you can find content if you search about Tiananmen Square on TikTok. They don't completely purge it or ban it or anything, but a lot of it probably gets swept up into their policies about any depictions of violence. And then also, you know, I'm sure there is some degree of ideological sensitivity to ByteDance and to them answering ultimately to the CCP. I don't deny or dispute that whatsoever. But and what's funny about this conversation is two things. I really have no love lost for this app, right? They have screwed me over repeatedly. If anything, banning it would help me personally because I have much bigger followings on YouTube and Instagram where people would flock to if TikTok was banned. But I'm just not comfortable with the federal government stripping 170 million Americans of their ability to communicate and express themselves and share and consume information overnight over nebulous and hypothetical national security concerns that I think can and should be addressed with more piecemeal steps.
Well, let me ask you this question. Are they really stripping those people of their ability to communicate? Because as you just noticed, you know, this is one of many different platforms on which people can communicate, on which they can build an audience. The digital marketer in me will tell people that if you are basing your livelihood off something like this, you want to find a way to own your audience, to not have it based on the whims of changing algorithms of social media companies. I've seen plenty of people who built up large followings. The algorithm changes, then all of a sudden you're not getting the engagement you were anymore. It's not monetizable in the same way. But because people can move to different platforms, I mean, is that really what's going on here then?
We wouldn't really accept that framing in any other free speech context, though. For example, like they only banned one newspaper. There's still five other newspapers for sale in this city. Or they only banned texting, but you can still email and use AIM. Like we would never accept that kind of framing in any other First Amendment or free speech related context. And I know people are quick to say that the Chinese Communist Party doesn't have First Amendment rights, and of course they don't. But one, TikTok is not owned by the Communist Party. It is it is a company based in America and Singapore that about 20% of which is owned by a Chinese company. 60% is owned by international investors. 20% is owned by employees, including 7,000 Americans. So I think the American owners have First Amendment rights, and then the 170 million users have First Amendment rights in this country. And I don't think we would accept that argument. I get your point. That's why I use all the platforms, right? Platform diversification is like a basic social media strategy because you could get banned, the algorithm could change, the audience could not take well to your content, and people will be able to communicate in other ways, sure. But I think Americans rightly prioritize free speech and the choosing the method in which you communicate and how and when and where is a key part of that.
Jonathan, does this at all rankle your First Amendment affinities?
No, it doesn't. I'll remake in brief the argument I made at the outset. This is a foreign-owned company. We don't allow foreign-owned companies to own TV stations. We don't allow foreign companies to own radio stations or newspapers. This is a platform, and it's a platform because the company can whether they do control the algorithm or not, they can control the algorithm. And so, to me, that's sufficient to say that they're responsible or could be responsible for controlling what appears on there. So I think it is a national security threat. I'm not comfortable with a foreign entity, especially one with whom we have the relationship we have with China, owning a company that has that kind of reach into the minds of Americans.
Pat, about 30 seconds. How concerned are you about the First Amendment implications of any of this?
I just don't see a connection with First Amendment. I don't think the First Amendment is really playing into what we're talking about here. If you want to have a national security conversation, we can do that. But in terms of tamping down the use of speech and the people's ability to use the internet to put what they want to say online, that is a private thing. You know, Mark Zuckerberg decides what goes on Meta. Tom decided what went on MySpace, and Huawei decides what goes on. It's ByteDance decides what goes on TikTok. But my point is I think of Cambridge Analytica. I'll talk when we get back.
We're coming up on a break. I do want to deal with the politics very briefly of this on the other side. When we are back from the break, we're talking about TikTok. I don't know if you can find us on TikTok, but you can find us a lot of other places beyond the Beltway with Bruce Jamont, Eric Cohn filling in this week.
This is Dennis Prager. Sign up today for an unforgettable experience in Israel this October. Mike Gallagher and I are traveling to the Holy Land on the Stand with Israel tour with our trusted partner, Inspiration Cruises and Tours. This trip of a lifetime to Israel is one you don't want to miss. Register today before it's too late at StandWithIsraelTour.com, StandWithIsraelTour.com, or call 855-565-5519, 855-565-5519.
You're smart, you're busy, and don't have time to waste on the mainstream media cycle. Salem News Channel breaks that cycle. Topics that matter from hosts worth watching. Dinesh D'Souza, Andrew Wilkow, Brandon Tatum, and more. Open debate and free speech you won't find anywhere else. Salem News Channel, not like the other guys. Watch anytime, on any screen, free, 24/7. Find everything you need to know at snc.tv. That's snc.tv.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school? Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
What if the music stopped? If the familiar voices were silenced? If there were no breaking news updates? What if your companion and connection to your community came with a monthly fee? Don't worry, we're free local radio with you wherever you go. Celebrating 100 years and looking forward to the next 100. We are broadcasters. Text radio to 52886 and let Congress know you depend on your local TV and radio stations. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Eric Cohn filling in this week for Bruce Dumont on Beyond the Beltway. We have been talking about TikTok, and I want to touch on the politics of this before we leave this hour and leave this subject. While he was president, there was some discussion from Donald Trump about doing something similar to the kind of legislation that we are seeing now. So maybe we should be surprised, or once again, this is Donald Trump. So when he contradicts himself, we really shouldn't be all that surprised, because he seems to like to do it a lot. He has come out in opposition to this legislation, with the rationale that it would be good for Mark Zuckerberg if we banned TikTok. I'm not going to ask you to rationalize what Donald Trump is thinking here, but how Thank big you. Of a role do you, you're welcome. How big of a role do you think this is going to play in whether or not this moves through the Senate now?
Oh God, I don't know. Unfortunately it'll probably play some with some senators' votes. I think it will probably play. I don't think it will affect whether or not it gets a vote. I don't think Mitch McConnell cares one way or the other. I don't think Chuck Schumer cares one way or the other. So, but the, I mean, look, God, Donald Trump taking a completely unprincipled stand. I'm stunned. It's incredible. It's like what we always say about Chicago in springtime weather. If you don't like it, wait 5 minutes, it'll change.
I can hear the shock in your voice, so I appreciate you really expressing yourself.
No, that was actually resignation and sorrow.
Good, good. We're sending that through the radio waves. Brad, what impact do you think Trump's flip-flop, I guess, on this will have on how Republicans perceive it?
Eric, I mean, remember, he didn't just support this as president. Donald Trump literally signed an executive order trying to force the divestiture of TikTok as president. It was then blocked in the courts, saying they need an act of Congress to do this. The president can't do it unilaterally. Now Congress has passed an act and Trump is suddenly against it. I'm also against it, but I don't respect the 180 Trump has done here at all, because it seems to either be motivated by money. He's apparently just been meeting with a massive Republican donor who's a part-time investor in TikTok, or motivated in unbridled hatred for one of TikTok's competitors, which is not how to set. I mean, look, I don't love Zuckerberg or Facebook either, and it would be good for them if the TikTok got banned, because they own Instagram, which has Reels, which is a TikTok competitor. But that's not how you should be setting national security policy, because you hate the CEO of another company. To me, it's insane, because Trump's actually agreeing with me, but I don't have any respect for the position he's taking at all somehow still.
Yeah, that there's. I'm gonna flub the actual expression here, but you know, the worst thing to experience is not a position being really adroitly attacked, but to have your position ineptly defended by people who agree with you. And well, let's just say perhaps Donald Trump's arguments along these lines aren't the most beneficial. Pat, I did think this was an interesting thing too, because what Brad was mentioning, this mega donor is also a contributor to Rand Paul's campaign. Rand Paul was recently on the X platform, formerly known as Twitter, being interviewed by one Tucker Carlson about this whole TikTok kerfuffle. And interestingly enough, it never came up that a major contributor to his campaign is somebody who is massively invested in TikTok.
What are you implying, Eric? No, I think, first of all, I'll call it X when it's at X.com. I still call it Twitter because it's at Twitter.com. Thank you very much. But yeah, I think the mega donor thing is really what this is all about. This is about money. Facebook is still dealing with the ramifications of a $725 million lawsuit dealing with Cambridge Analytica. Remember them? And that this was all based around election influence. And who is Cambridge Analytica? It's someone hires to steal data that they can then influence elections to attain power to then pass legislation that's beneficial to them and their company. I mean, this is all very straightforward. And so how to fight that, again, brings me back to this idea of what defenses do we have other than just saying, okay, well, the president can say no all the time. Outside of that, when cybersecurity is running all of our water supply, is running our dams, is running traffic lights, everything that our country runs on is put through the internet, and it's all very vulnerable. On top of that, in terms of influence, that's one way to look at the cybersecurity aspect of this. The other is that our phones are very vulnerable to hacking. Our home Wi-Fi networks are very vulnerable to hacking. A lot of people have electronic Wi-Fi connected alarm systems protecting their homes and their families. These are things that are not being considered in this type of a wide-ranging conversation about cybersecurity. TikTok is not the problem. There is larger issues at play here. But and I love having moral implication conversations about my presence on Twitter, which I love and still use, but it's a tool that just like a knife, you know, you can use a knife to put butter on bread, or you can do something I can't say on the radio, but I digress. I will say one thing to Jonathan's point. I do think that it is interesting to think about what will happen in the Senate. No, there's no bigger anti-Russian hawk in the Senate right now than Mitch McConnell. And he rolled right over when Donald Trump told him to the point of resignation, in fact. So I really don't know how that ball is going to bounce on the other side of the Capitol.
Well,
it's a good question.
Eric, defense of Rand Paul, in fairness to him, I'm not sure he is motivated by the donor, because he literally opposes the federal government doing anything ever. He is just being consistent on this. He votes no on everything almost all the time.
I was going to say the same thing. I actually can't stand Senator Paul, especially on foreign policy, but he is entirely consistent on this. And I assume in this limited instance, well, actually generally, I assume the donor in this case is following Senator Paul, not the other way around.
Yeah.
Very quickly, before we end this segment and this hour of the program, as a fan of the McLaughlin Group, I'm going to ask you a question at the end here. Will this pass and become law, Jonathan?
Yes.
Brad.
Yes.
Pat.
No.
Wrong. I don't actually know that any of you are wrong. I just wanted to say that. But I do think that it is, I'm going to go with no as my guess for whether or not this actually passes, because when you got to bet on something happening in Congress, bet against Congress doing anything whatsoever. There's a long track record of that there. Brad, I want to thank you so much for joining us this hour for the program. Really enjoyed having you. Hope to have you back on this program in the future. Thanks, either guys. With Bruce or when I'm guest hosting. We will be back with Jack Butler from National Review to continue all of these important conversations. Eric Cohn filling in this week for Bruce Dumont on Beyond the Beltway. Welcome back to Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont. I am Eric Cohn filling in this week for Bruce, and we are joined this week for the program by conservative Jonathan Greenberg and Democrat Pat Whalen, and are now pleased to welcome into the conversation Jack Butler, who is the submissions editor for National Review, joining us for a conversation in this hour of the program. And where I would like to start is with something that happened on Friday. Former Vice President Mike Pence announced that he will not be endorsing his former boss, Donald Trump, in the 2024 general election. In an appearance on Fox News, Pence said that he, quote, cannot in good conscience back Trump, as there are, quote, profound differences between their views on various issues. Pence, who unsuccessfully ran for the Republican nomination, declined to reveal who he plans to vote for in November, but said he would, quote, never vote for President Joe Biden. So the most logical question that I can think to ask about this is a question that I find myself asking with most political developments, which is, I'll start with you, Jack, to welcome you into this hour of the program. Does this matter, Jack?
Well, I like to think that some things matter. But by the way, thank you for having me. I think it does matter. I think that Mike Pence has put himself, a bit surprisingly, I would say, in a position that that ends up speaking for a lot of disaffected conservatives who haven't changed their principles on most matters, but who have various reasons to be skeptical of Donald Trump. And such people have often lacked a proper champion, because in many cases, people on the right or formerly on the right who end up Trump skeptical end up jettisoning a lot of their other principles as well. Mike Pence has not done that. In fact, if you go and look at some of the things that he and the organization he's attached to, Advancing American Freedom, or some of the stands they've taken recently, for example, they're for the bill restricting TikTok, the forced divestiture bill that's being debated in the House. And this is something that Donald Trump is against. I mean, so I find this heartening to see Pence do this when so many other figures on the right have not managed to figure out this unique combination of being Trump skeptical but not abandoning other conservative principles.
It was not specified as to the profound differences, whether or not they included a belief that Mike Pence should have been hanged. But that is certainly one thing to remember as to why he may have some hesitations about supporting his former boss. Jonathan, I'll come to you now with the same question. Does this matter?
Electorally, probably not. I think for the soul of the American conservative movement, yes, it does. I think actually all of us who have been never Trump and to Jack's point, remained conservative, which is a smaller and smaller number. But all of us, I think, need someone like a Mike Pence out in front leading the charge. I've always liked Mike Pence. I met him when I was the Midwest political director at AIPAC, and he was in Congress. I got to work with him a little bit when he was there. And I'm from Indiana, so whenever we had a conversation, I would always lead with the fact that I was from Fort Wayne, Indiana, and we'd have a nice conversation about that. He's a good man, a deeply good man, which is why, honestly, I was disappointed that he signed on with Trump in the first place. I don't think anything that we saw from Trump in the 4 years he was president or after was a surprise. All of it was completely predictable. A lot of us predicted it. And I actually tweeted the day before he accepted the vice presidential spot not to do it. You can still avoid being covered in his excreta. Don't do it. And he did it anyway. And I was disappointed that he did that, but I'm heartened that he's still the good man that I knew him to be. He's in his mid-60s. He'll never be president. There's nowhere else for him to go politically. He has the freedom to do this, and I'm glad that he's doing it. And I wrote in Dan Coats, my former senator from Indiana, former DNI. I wrote him in for president in 2020. Maybe I'll write in Mike Pence this year.
Pat Whalen, you're a Democrat, so I would imagine when the name Mike Pence comes up, you don't get the warm and fuzzies about him. But as someone who I imagine would not like to see Donald Trump elected president in this upcoming November election, I'll not only ask you, does this matter? But I want to hearken back to what Democrats have done in previous election cycles, which is to seek out and support some of the Trumpiest voices, particularly in primaries. When they had opportunities, not that I would expect them to support Republicans in any meaningful way, but to at least, you know, recognize that there were people out there like Haley or Pence on a presidential level, or certain people in congressional and senatorial primaries who were not going to be just roll call yes votes for whatever Donald Trump would want in Congress, but that nonetheless got a really hard time from a lot of Democrats. So does this matter? And have you where do you come down on the position of the Democratic Party vis-a-vis the internal conflict in the Republican Party? You know, assuming that you want to see a well-functioning nation, it's going to have two political parties. And I would imagine, or at least this is the way I usually think about it, I would like both of those political parties to be the best versions of themselves.
I would too, but unfortunately they represent the American people. I'm just kidding. I don't get the warm and fuzzies when I think about Mike Pence, and that's because when I met him at the Iowa State Fair, he refused to answer my one question, which was, have you ever seen Mulan? They whisked him away. He refused to answer the question. I don't know why. It's a harmless question. It's a Disney movie. What's the problem? Honest to God, I have footage.
Chinese interference. That's what that is.
Was this the animated one or the live action one?
Well, that's a good question. You know, whichever one you consider less woke, how about that? When I think about it, does this matter? You know, electorally is typically the only reason that would matter. But you make a good point, Eric, which is basically it comes down to parties. And I just think the American conservative movement needs to look in the mirror here. I mean, the John Birch Society is going to CPAC. You know, what is going on? The Republican Party is no longer, you know, what Mike Pence wants it to be. And in answer to your question, does it matter? Nikki Haley has disappeared in a puff of smoke. She's gone from the national discourse. And she was as close as anyone could get to making a dent in the idea that the Republican Party still is not the Republican Party of Donald Trump. And so I don't think Democrats, are excited at the idea of having total paralysis encompass Capitol Hill. And that's really what's going on here. You know, we like to laugh about Chip Roy here, but this segment of that party, and, you know, there's ideological extremes abound, it is making it difficult for us all to talk to each other. And so I thank you again for having me here, because I relish an opportunity to have this type of discussion where we're not all just trying to score points and jump down each other's throats. But that's what's happening in politics. And people are being billed at the idea that that's what politics should be. And it shouldn't. And Joe Biden tried to get that infrastructure bill passed in an effort to show people that we can all agree on some things. But I don't know how much of a dent that made 8,000 news cycles later.
I want to meet
the fly. I like Mike Pence fine, but I want to meet that fly. That's what I want to do.
Well, yes, we should all remember the fly. And perhaps we will have time before the end of this program to debate which of the two versions of Mulan was most woke. So I'll let all of you think about that over the course of the break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about Mike Pence's non-endorsement and whether or not it matters, as well as several other things. Eric Cohn, filling in this week for Bruce Dumont on Beyond the Beltway.
As a local business owner, you get called every week by marketing companies. We get it. We have hundreds of satisfied customers. Here's what a satisfied client recently said.
Open enrollment is going great. We're hitting record numbers. Thank you so much for this report. It really is amazing to see how the marketing is really shaping our enrollment around the city.
If you're a local business and ready for the next step, visit surroundchicago.com right now. Our experts are ready to help you take your marketing to the next level. Visit surroundchicago.com today.
In the new video series, Fault Lines, Professor Vody Bonkam examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide. Available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
We're back on Beyond the Beltway. Eric Cohn filling in for Bruce Dumont this week. And over the course of the break, I did develop some very intricate thoughts on which version of Mulan is more woke. But we'll maybe save that for the final segment of the program. I want to come back to you, Jonathan, because you intimated in the first part of this hour that you know Mike Pence well enough, at least to have discussed what is the best hamburger stand in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's not going to be the Republican nominee for president. That, of course, is going to be Donald Trump. He didn't even make it very far in the Republican primary. He is not going to endorse him. And he said that he is not going to endorse or vote for Joe Biden, that's not going to help, going to happen. There is this organization out there called No Labels that is seeking a candidate for president. They have seemed to state to people that they would prefer that the top of the ticket be a Republican and the vice president be a Democrat. This is the formulation that they desire. Is there any chance you think that Mike Pence could be their guy?
No, I think he's way too conservative to. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess he could pull away some Trump voters, which I think is what No Labels really wants. But no, I don't think so. They're on the ballot in what, 14 states? Is that right? And I don't think that's. I think Nikki Haley's a lot more likely of an option there. I think she more matches what it is that they're looking for, what it is that they think their activists can tolerate. I just think Mike Pence is actually a very conservative person, both personally and politically. So no, I don't think that's a good fit.
Jack, do you think there's any potential of a fit there? And do you think, I guess I'll open this up for a larger conversation, do you think that this No Labels operation is going to be able to identify someone who's going to want to take what they're offering and be on the ballot in 14, potentially as many as 20 some states, depending on how some ballot access campaigns and some lawsuits turn out? Is Mike Pence their guy, and is anybody their guy?
I don't see Mike Pence as the guy. It just doesn't seem like the right fit for him. I don't know who the guy or the girl would be. Some obvious candidates, Larry Hogan, for example, have declined and instead to pursue other offices. Maybe this is something that Kyrsten Sinema would be interested in. She seems to suddenly have a gap in her schedule now that she's not running for re-election out of Arizona. So I don't know. But I have an abiding skepticism of the electoral consequences of this effort. I think that the argument I find most persuasive about these third party attempts is that you would think that in a year like this, where both candidates are not very exciting to large swaths of the electorate, that this would be the chance for a third party to make serious waves and perhaps have something approaching a Ross Perot showing. But actually, you underestimate the logic. You, my hypothetical interlocutor, underestimate the power of negative polarization, which is perhaps the most powerful force in the, certainly in our politics, and it's approaching the top five for the universe itself. And so, I mean, the best that those efforts can expect probably is just to take votes from candidates in key places, which could make a huge difference, actually. But it won't be like a significant thing nationwide, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm glad you made that point.
No Labels isn't.
Go ahead.
I was going to say No Labels is not the third party alternative that I think people need to watch out for. That's RFK Jr.
Yeah, we are going to come back to RFK Jr. in a moment here. But I was going to say, Jack, I'm glad you made the point, because I think that's a good one, that there seems to be this predominating logic that because everybody hates, not everybody, but lots of people hate the two nominees, that this is a ripe opportunity for somebody else. But I think you're right that people are driven into different directions by how much they hate one or the other people. And the opportunity to peel votes away is just not what you would wish it would be. And I think we even found that out in 2016, where you had two former governors of two of these 50 states on the Libertarian Party's ticket. Maybe not anyone's ideal example of what a ticket for a third party should look like, but at least they were somewhat serious people. And they didn't do really well at all in an electoral environment where a lot of people hated Trump and a lot of people hated Hillary Clinton. Pat, I want to come to you with kind of a similar question. Do you think that we know from No Labels that they would prefer to have a Republican at the top of the ticket and a Democrat as vice president. If they were to flip that and say, get someone like Kyrsten Sinema as the presidential candidate, do you worry at all about an effort like that? We'll come to RFK in a moment here, about the specific No Labels effort and perhaps that instantiation pulling votes away from Joe Biden in November.
If your concern is that Democrats would flock towards Sinema, why don't we just put Joe Manchin up there? You know, I don't know that we really have. I think the third party box here is kind of between a rock and a hard place. You need someone that people know. You need a name that someone recognizes, but you also need someone that doesn't have a lot of baggage for either side. And I think that is that's a tricky tightrope to walk. In terms of Sinema, I don't think that the left side of the aisle has a lot of love lost for her on her way out. And so this idea that people want another option is very real, but I just don't see, there's no name. I feel like we would be able to come up with like two or three possible names that might have a chance and be interested in it. Pence doesn't have the pizzazz. Haley, I feel a little too far right. A lot of name recognition, but also a lot of baggage as, you know, Secretary of State for Trump.
Ambassador for UN.
Ambassador to the UN. Thank you. What's the difference? He doesn't know. But I, yeah, so I think the third party option is very, I'm just saying, yeah, I mean, put him on the spot.
Well, Haley actually sort of elevated herself to a cabinet level position, like just sort of by force of will in the Trump administration. It's not technically, it's not.
She was a tight circle senior advisor, right? On international affairs, you know, and that, but, I don't see a lot of good options for a third party candidate, unfortunately.
Jack, I do want to come back to you on, I think, this general point that's been raised about third options. And for some reason, the a great quote from The Simpsons popped into my head while Pat was speaking there, where Sideshow Bob explains himself by saying, "Your guilty conscience may force you to vote Democratic, but deep down inside, you secretly long for a cold-hearted Republican to lower taxes, brutalize criminals, and rule you like a king." I think the reason that popped into my head is because while people may proclaim that they want a third option, is there really a whole lot to suggest to us that they actually do want a third option? They're just, every time that it seems to be extended to them, the Libertarian Party was on the ballot in all 50 states in 2016. Everybody just kind of goes, nah. Is that primarily because they think the candidates are bad, in your opinion? Or is it because third parties just aren't that big of a deal in this country?
I just want to mention another relevant Sideshow Bob quote about, you can't keep the Democrats out of the White House forever, and when they're back, they'll release me and all my criminal buddies. I love that they give him those lines, very funny. But anyway, appeal. I think the appeal of the third party is it's in the abstract and never in the particular. That's what it comes down to. People like the idea of it, and then when they get into the voting booth, they look at the R and they look at the D, and they think to themselves, well, I got to pick one of them to keep the other one from the White House, so that they don't let their criminal buddies out to harass me on the street, or whatever it happens to be. So yeah, that's where I come down. And it's sort of, if you are depressed by the monotony, certainly of repeating the 2020 election, this might be a sort of depressing thing, but I think it's the reality.
Jonathan, coming back to you, you mentioned, go ahead, Pat.
Well, just, I think a good, keeping the Sideshow Bob topic going, I think laying out a bunch of rakes and seeing whichever candidate can stay away from
yes.
them would probably be a good
That's
idea.
That's a good summary of our politics for the past, I don't know, decade or so.
Let's see who can avoid those.
And arguably rakes. a better way of determining a nominee for a party than the current primary system, although at this point I'm willing to give strange women lying in ponds handing out swords a chance. I mean, could they do any worse than what we've seen currently?
I never took you for a anarcho-syndicist communist, Eric, but I think
well, now you see the violence inherent in the system, Pat.
He's being oppressed.
You saw
wow.
it.
Wow.
I do. If there's anyone who has an upper hand in this, while you were talking, I was thinking, it is the Republicans have a lane here. If they can present someone that isn't Pence, that isn't Haley, that says, look, it's not a third option, but remember when? Remember before MAGA? You know, I feel like that would be enough to pull people. But are the intricacies of an infrastructure deal that boring that they just, the pomp and circumstance isn't enough for them? Who's to say? Not me.
I do want to touch on RFK. Go ahead, Jonathan. You look like you were going to say something.
Well, I was just going to say, so this is about RFK. Look.
1 minute.
People want to vote for somebody who can win. The No Labels candidate, whoever they are, will be on the ballot as of right now in about 14 states. I'm looking at Kennedy's website here for ballot access. They've completed petitioning in Nevada, Utah, and New Hampshire. That's it. They're petitioning in California, Texas, a handful of other places. They're not even petitioning in Pennsylvania or Ohio or Florida. It's a joke. They haven't even started in Illinois. Like, it's a joke. He can't win, so it's only a protest vote. So the only question that matters about No Labels or RFK or anybody else is, who do they take votes from? Who do they spoil? That's the only question mm-hmm. that matters, because they can't win.
Yep.
We will discuss who... Ask Dean Phillips about the viability of that top kind of option. But I think one thing all Americans can agree on is they look at Washington, D.C. and say, oh, we could get some lovely filth down here.
Yeah. We will explore the possibility of who these candidates could take votes from when we come back from the break, and maybe even have a brief conversation about the potentiality of RFK's vice presidential pick. That won't matter, but we'll pretend that it matters because it'll be fun for at least a minute. Eric Cohn filling in this week for Bruce Dumont on Beyond the Beltway.
In the new video series, Fault Lines, Professor Voddie Baucham examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide. Available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
Feel like you're trying to push a boulder uphill wearing skates? If you run or manage a local business today, you're challenged like never before. We get it, and we want to help. We're Salem Surround. We're a full-service marketing agency that'll help you increase your customer base by designing incredibly effective plans to reach your consumers day, night, and everywhere they might be.
If you're a local business and want to see what Salem Surround can do for you, visit surroundchicago.com. Remember to visit surroundchicago.com today.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Eric Hone filling in this week for Bruce Dumont on Beyond the Beltway. I'm joined for the program this week by conservative Jonathan Greenberg and Democrat Pat Whalen. And since this is the corresponding segment to the one in the first hour where we have all our guests introduce themselves to the audience, and the only new one is Jack Butler. Jack, why don't you introduce yourself to our listening audience?
What is there to say that has not already been said? I am Jack Butler, submissions editor at National Review from Cincinnati, Ohio. I should probably give a shout out to 55KRC if that's allowed. That was the local talk radio station I grew up listening to. So I went to Hillsdale College in Michigan and distance runner on the side. I just ran a race yesterday. If anyone, I don't know if the, I forget the technical specifics of this show, but if anyone is actually watching it, I'm not sure. There are some medals.
They are. They are indeed.
Okay, yeah, there are some medals and bibs behind me. I've collected them and hung them on my wall. As the Romans would have called them spolia opima. I will leave others to look up what that means.
And we have our vocabulary word for the day. Didn't know that it was going to come in Latin, but Jack, thank you very much for that. I did say we would talk about... Yes, I do appreciate it. I did take Latin for 2 years in high school, and I remember how to say three things, boy, girl, and mad cow disease. So clearly it is something that has served me well over the course of my life if there is ever an outbreak of Morbus Furious Bos, which is Latin for mad cow disease. I did say that we were going to talk about RFK's vice presidential pick, but that's something that's actually less relevant right now than Latin. So perhaps we can just say, insert your own Aaron Rodgers joke here, and we'll move on to something that was far more consequential, which was in Washington this past week. Special counsel Robert Hur was at a hearing. And I'm just going to give you one. I'm going to assume most people have a general idea of what happened there, which is there was questioning about this report that he had submitted to the attorney general that was then released about whether or not President Joe Biden should be charged for the willful retention of classified documents. He determined that he didn't recommend charges, in part because he believed a jury would perceive Joe Biden to be an elderly, well-meaning elderly man with memory recall problems. This set off a bit of a fire, of course, with Democrats being very concerned about the perception of Joe Biden and his memory. I'm going to give you the take that I actually thought was the best one. After having watched the highlights of this hearing, Sarah Isger over at the Dispatch's take said, you know, if it showed up at the end and it said, these hearings sponsored by dictatorships, better than your democracy. I kind of get the point that she's making there. It wasn't really the best representation of how our system can be. I hate that I keep asking the question of do these things matter, but I feel like it is the necessary question for us to ask, and I will turn it to you, Jonathan. Do the Hur hearings matter at all?
No, they don't matter at all. And I don't think the report matters. I don't think the fact that he's not being charged matters. I'm not sure it would have mattered if he had been charged. I don't think mixing up Macron and Mitterrand or what, I don't know if he said helmet call. I don't remember what he said, but I don't think it matters. None of it matters. It's all baked in. Everybody knows how they feel about it. Everybody's made up their mind, which is why I actually think we need to just fast forward to November and get this. Well, I was going to say something not appropriate for radio, but just get this over with as quickly as possible. And by the way, I actually think RFK's VP choice is potentially significantly more important than this topic, because he actually will take votes from somebody, and that's going to help him. And if you don't think Aaron Rodgers is going to appeal to people, you're wrong. I don't think it should, for lots of reasons, but it will. And I don't think anybody cares about this. We do, but we already made up our minds who we're voting for.
We do, and Pat, I'm going to come to you in a second here. So I should note, since we brought it up, it does not look like it is going to be Aaron Rodgers who will be the vice presidential pick for RFK, although it is kind of perfect that when this news dropped, apparently Rodgers was at a ayahuasca retreat, which is just about the perfect possible way that this could be could have been broken to him. It is apparently going to be a woman by the name of Nicole Shanahan, who used to be married to Google co-founder Sergey Brin. She is a California attorney and entrepreneur and a very wealthy person. That is who apparently he is going to pick. But Pat, I'll toss this to you, and maybe you can pick which matters
just to be
more
clear,
and opine.
Just to be clear, it's not going to be Zach Wilson, just to be clear, right?
It is not going to be Zach Wilson. Sadly, he will still need to look in somewhere else to find a job. But that's enough for this week on NFL Sunday. Pat, coming to you, I would think that the politics of the Hur hearings and the Hur report do matter somewhat, because we're going to have this election decided by this group that I love the terminology that they've come up for the group, the double haters. People who hate both candidates and will decide probably at the last minute who they are going to choose. And as I see it, they're going to choose primarily on whether they hate the circus of Donald Trump more and, want to go with Joe Biden and were willing to overlook the concerns about his age, or whether they liked the Trump years well enough and thought things were going on and they're concerned about Biden's age and they're going to vote for Trump. The sense in that this report reinforced something that was, again, Jonathan's right. I think it's baked in. but something that people perceive to be true. And the stickiest stuff in Washington are news items like this that come out that reinforce what people already perceived to be true. How concerning do you think this is for Joe Biden to now have multiple instances drawing attention to the fact that he's getting a lot older and doesn't really seem to be the same Joe Biden he was 4 years ago, let alone 12 years ago?
Yeah, I think that Jonathan is right. You know, we care, but who else? And to kind of illustrate that point while trying to answer your question, Eric, I you know, when asked why Republican strategists put the bar so low for the State of the Union, I think they said, well, we didn't think he could limbo. All he had to do was show up and yell. And everyone was like, wow, this is amazing. And I had a friend saying this to me, who's a big Biden guy. He's from Delaware, and he swears that if you're born, Joe Biden is in the maternity room and spanks you to get your vocal cords going, every single baby in Delaware. And he said that this is a big deal. The state, they set the bar low. The Republicans made a tactical error. It's an unforced error. He gave the State of the Union, and he looked great. And I looked at my friend and said, I love you, but the people you need to convince aren't watching the State of the Union. They are more concerned about the kitchen table issues and what the ramifications of his policy decisions are affecting them right now. Now, my theory is that by the time Halloween rolls around, people are going to get a little more focused on what it is the contrast is between these two candidates. And we already saw it in the last couple of days. Donald Trump is ramping up the rhetoric. He's doing that thing that he does, throwing bloodbath into a sentence. Did he mean bloodbath? Did he not? We're all talking about it. It's all stupid. It has nothing to do with being the president, but it does if he wins. And that is, again, my point. I think that the rhetoric is going to ramp up, and this is what the Biden campaign's betting on. The guy's going to be very unpresidential, and by the time Halloween rolls around, people are going to see what the stark contrast in these candidates really is. And they're going to say, you want to go back to the way it was, or do you want this boring stability? I'm a comedian, so
Jonathan,
I want
you were going to jump in there.
Yeah, I'd say two things to that point. One, Trump has been uncharacteristically quiet for months up until the last, I don't know, whatever week or so. That's not going to last. He's going to start opening his mouth. And two, Joe Biden has, I don't even know how much cash on hand, but it's a lot. And Donald Trump doesn't have very much cash on hand because he keeps spending it on lawyers. So at some point, those hundreds of millions of dollars are going to get dumped into television on Donald Trump's head. And that's going to affect numbers too. So the fact that, you know, everybody's hyperventilating about where the polls are, and yeah, they're both, you know, ridiculously unpopular. But the foundational elements of a campaign are, I think, still very good for Biden. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to stay that way. But as of today, I'd much rather be Joe Biden than Donald Trump.
Jack, what were your reactions to the HER hearings this week, and a lot of the HER discourse about whether or not Joe Biden actually is an elderly man with memory recall problems?
Well, so even though I'm the only, this show's beyond the Beltway, I'm actually in the Beltway. So despite the fact that I have this proximity, I decided to go into sensory deprivation with Aaron Rodgers, take some of the spice from Dune and sort of project myself into the future. And what I found, the visions were unclear, but what I found is similar to what you said, namely, the HER hearings only matter to the extent that they reinforce pre-existing perceptions of Joe Biden. And I think we have seen polling bear out that people have noticed a serious decline in his bearing and his demeanor, and that this may end up being one of the dispositive factors in the election. So I was unable to divine more than that, but that is what I was able to see. I think I need some more spice to figure out the truth, but it's not forthcoming. But that's all I can say for the time being.
Pat.
I knew you didn't really have blue eyes. Something that gets lost a lot for me in terms of this deposition is specifically that part where he seems like a nice old man, couldn't remember when his son died. I believe these questionings with Biden happened on October 8th and 9th. So I think it is a very tumultuous time for the United States president to be asked any sort of question,
yes,
but that's not a fact.
I think that's, Pat, I do think that's true, but that is also part of the job of president of the United States, is to be able to be responsive to all things really at all times. And perhaps we're Jack sure. here has identified for us what Biden's memory recall problem source really is. Is it fear? Because as I'm told, fear is the mind killer.
So true.
More of this kind of conversation when we are back Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont, Eric Cohn filling in this week for Bruce.
feel like you're trying to push a boulder uphill wearing skates? If you run or manage a local business today, you're challenged like never before. We get it, and we want to help. We're Salem Surround. We're a full-service marketing agency that'll help you increase your customer base by designing incredibly effective plans to reach your consumers day, night, and everywhere they might be.
If you're a local business and want to see what Salem Surround can do for you, visit surroundchicago.com. Remember to visit surroundchicago.com today.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Eric Bone filling in this week for Bruce Dumont. And in the few minutes that we have left on the program here, I want to turn to one final topic, which was Senator Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, gave a speech this week, which he called for a new government in Israel. Of course, Israel in the midst of a war right now in Gaza. And right after that, I believe his staff set a new land speed record for how quickly something got walked back. Jonathan, since I have you and foreign policy, particularly Israeli issues, somewhat your bailiwick, how shocking was this to hear the Senate Majority Leader call for a new government of an ally while they're in the middle of a war?
I was pretty shocked. I mean, it's pretty shocking. It's obviously not something that a U.S. senator has anything to do with. Israel is a liberal democracy and an independent country, and the people of Israel are the ones that choose their government. And right now, yeah, Netanyahu is very unpopular, and for good reason. And I have said publicly on Twitter that he needs to resign, and a lot of other people, but I'm not a U.S. senator. I think it's ridiculous that Schumer said that. It's Schumer leveraging his, I think, undeserved reputation as a great friend of Israel, and doing so in order to hurt Bibi. The only good thing that could come out of it is that it could have worked, but that was unlikely. I'm not sure who told him this would be a good idea. It actually probably, we'll see polling in the next few days, it probably helped Bibi, actually, as foreign interference tends to do. And, it was irresponsible. It was likely to backfire. I think it was really dumb. I'm not sure who it was designed to help or what it was designed to do, but it was a really bad idea. That said, in my personal opinion, Netanyahu absolutely needs to go, should have gone days after October 7th. The war should have been prosecuted by someone else, someone that Israelis actually might trust. I look at it as kind of a Chamberlain-Churchill situation that, the person who had failed in the early prosecution of the war really needed to step aside. And we can get into the details if you want, but no, I think it was a horrible thing for Schumer to do. And the staff didn't really take it back, though, and Schumer's been praised up and down by people on the Jewish left, which I'm ashamed of. But I think it was a bad idea.
Pat, was this a misstep by Schumer? And if so, how significant of one?
I mean, this is extremely significant. I mean, the United States Senate in any way to insert itself into international affairs this directly, period, let alone to an ally to the United States like Israel during this tumultuous time in the Middle East is, dare I say, unprecedented. I know that word gets thrown around a lot. But, you know, Benny Gantz coming to the White House without the blessing of Bibi Netanyahu's administration was very telling to me. The fact that he came, without permission, basically, from the administration of Netanyahu was a signal to me. I kind of long suspected that the inaction of the international community would find a scapegoat in Benjamin Netanyahu. And it seems as though that is happening. I mean, clearly these are machinations with the blessing of the president. He said that it was a good speech. He had no criticisms for Senator Schumer. And obviously the highest ranking Jewish politician in American history, this is significant and intentional in my view. The ramifications of it, I really can't say. It seems more of a signal than it was a way to influence voters or the body itself. Mitch McConnell saying this is a terrible thing. We cannot let this precedent happen, which is kind of funny. But, you know, on the other hand, not. It certainly is a big deal. I can't argue with that.
Coming back from beyond the Beltway to inside the Beltway with you, Jack, what has been the reaction in the Beltway to this speech from Senator Schumer?
So the main reaction has been questions, and I am one of the people asking the questions, namely why. Why did he do this and why now? And the best I can figure is that it's some attempt to placate this voting bloc of an undetermined size on the left that seems to have become very angry at Israel in the aftermath of the attack on Israel. And I find that it seems to me that a good number of Democrats, elected Democrats, are contorting themselves to serve this constituency of a size that I simply don't know. I can't answer how many people there are in this group, but they can be very loud. They know how to get attention, and for whatever reason, people like Chuck Schumer have determined that they need to throw these people some kind of bone. And Netanyahu's somewhat of an easy target because he's probably on his way out anyway. I mean, the Israeli public is pretty mad at him. And so this could be just a way for him to signal, look, I don't like what's going on either. I don't like what he's doing. And without actually having much consequence, but actually it is having consequence. It's made Netanyahu more popular in Israel. So I don't know. It's perplexing.
Jonathan, we've got about a minute left, and I want to point one question to you, which is let's suppose that Netanyahu was gone tomorrow. How likely is it that anything significant when it comes to Israel's prosecution of this war is going to change if it's Benny Gantz, if it's anyone else?
I actually think it's less likely that there would be any kind of a ceasefire under a different leader. Netanyahu is famous for preferring calm over finishing the job. I think that he is more desperate than anyone in Israeli history to hold on to his own power, and therefore makes decisions based on that rather than based on what he thinks is the right thing to do. I'm not even sure Bibi's got any idea what the right thing to do is anymore. He only understands popularity and lack of it. Gantz is a lot more likely to finish the job militarily. So this idea that it's somehow Bibi's war, it's just ridiculous. There's a There's a unity government that's prosecuting the war, and anybody who knows anything knows that. And so the attempt to make this into something, Bibi the boogeyman of the war, is simply an attempt to get Israel to stop doing what it needs to do.
We are going to have to leave it there for this evening. Really appreciate everyone's contributions to the program. Want to thank you, Jonathan Greenberg, our conservative Democrat, Pat Whalen. In the first hour, we had Brad Palumbo from Base Politics. And in this hour, Jack Butler from National Review. Thanks so much for being on the program this evening. Thanks, Bruce, for handing over the microphone to me for this evening to host the program. Good night from beyond the Beltway. Eric Cohn, going in for Bruce DeMont.